With the start of school this week, I have been thinking about those days when I was sharpening number two pencils, or setting the alarm the night before the first day of school to get up early for the first time in a long time, or what it was like to take notes or study for a test. And I've thought about my favorite teachers, from Miss O'Tyson, who welcomed me on the very first day of school in kindergarten, to Miss Butler, who came up with rhymes and dances to help us remember math equations. And perhaps it was one of our favorite teachers that taught us that on November 19th, 1863, Abraham Lincoln got up to deliver one of the most powerful speeches in American history, the Gettysburg Address. It was the dedication of the National Cemetery at Gettysburg, honoring those who had lost their lives in battle. And with those handful of initial words, 47 years ago, everyone in the crowd was immediately drawn in to the speech, which was only composed of 272 words. It took just a few minutes, if that, to deliver the entire speech. The photographers did not have time to set up their equipment. But the one thing I don't remember learning, and I was probably busy passing a note in class or something like that, but that was not the only Gettysburg Address. Edward Everett, a well-known orator and historian, also spoke that day. He had been a professor at Harvard. He had been the governor of Massachusetts, a senator, a secretary of state. He was invited to be the keynote speaker, not Lincoln. And his speech could not have been more different than Lincoln's. For starters, his first sentence alone was 52 words, almost 20% of Lincoln's entire speech, that Everett spent weeks researching, talking with local historians and military experts. He read Lee's entire account of the Battle of Gettysburg, and to get it all in, he used 13,000 words. The speech lasted 2 hours, which was quite impressive because he memorized every single word. Today, though, we remember 47 years ago, reminding us of the sheer power of words and how important it is that we use them well. And in order to use words well, we have to first listen. As the psalmist writes, "Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my supplications." That the psalmist needed, the psalmist yearned, the psalmist craved for God to listen. And God is always listening to us, as the psalmist says, because of God's steadfast love and forgiveness. If you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, who could stand? That God never stops listening to us. But we know that when we are hurt, it is one of the first things that we stop doing. Pain and resentment can clog up the ears in such a way that no ENT surgeon can fix it. Sound just can't get through. When we are hurt, the conversation is over. But there is this link between the heart and the ears. When the heart is hurt, the ears are closed. When our hearts are warmed, the ears are open. So no matter what, God never stops listening, because at the very heart of God is love and forgiveness. And in order for us to use words well, we have to first listen. That words are so powerful. Like when someone says to us that we are appreciated, or we belong, or that we matter. That those words have the power not only to change our day, but also our lives. Words have the power to bless. It's why we bless the backpacks this morning. But words also have the power to curse. That words need to be used carefully. That perhaps Shakespeare had it wrong. A rose by any other name would not be as sweet. That there's power in a name, whether it's our family name, reminding us of the people who have stood beside us or loved us throughout our lives, or like one of those heart-wrenching moments on the playground where a bully takes our name and twists it in order to give us a nickname to make fun of us. That a name can hold love inside of it. Or it can become a weapon to harm us. That words can empower. And words can defeat. It is why cheap laughs have such a high cost. That we could have heard 1,000 compliments in a given week, but none of them come to mind because of the pain of one insult. The letter to the Ephesians invites us to use words to cultivate love, which takes far more than a dictionary or a thesaurus. It asks us to put away falsehood, to speak the truth in love, to avoid anger and evil, to avoid resentment, bitterness, or slander. The only way to use words in those ways is first to listen. And we have to listen with more than our ears. We have to also listen with our hearts, which, as it turns out, is also linked to our imagination. That we need to imagine the other person's circumstances. That we need to imagine the barriers between us from their eyes. That we need to stand where they are standing, hearing their story from start to finish. And once we start speaking up, we need to continue to listen. We need to listen to ourselves, to what is behind our words, so that they are motivated by only the best things. And it is important to note, we will not always get this right. Because when we fall short, we cannot stop trying. Bryan Stevenson is a lawyer and the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative, and he learned this early on as a boy, that when he was growing up, he went to church with his mother, and when he was around the age of 10, he remembers standing outside the sanctuary, talking to his group of friends, probably discussing the sermon, probably not discussing the sermon, talking about the week ahead. And one of his friends had family visiting that weekend, a cousin who was painfully shy. He was sort of hiding behind the group while still hanging out with the group. But Stevenson said hello and asked him where he was from. And the cousin sort of stumbled over his words. He had a noticeable speech impediment, so much so that he stumbled over the name of his hometown. And without even thinking about it, Stevenson laughed. But out of the corner of his eye, he saw his mom's reaction. She heard everything, and she was appalled. And he knew, and we know, what that look meant. She called him over immediately and said, "Brian, what are you doing?" He said, "Mom, I didn't." She stopped him mid-sentence. She said, "Brian, we never laugh. It's somebody else." And with a contrite heart, he said, "Mom, I'm sorry." That he adored his mom and could not bear the thought that she was that disappointed in him. So she said, "Brian, I want you to go back over there, and I want you to tell that little boy that you're sorry." And he's just nodding along. And she said, "Then I want you to give him a hug." He stopped nodding. And then she said, "I want you to tell him that you love him." Well, he froze. His eyes got really big. All he could think about was his friends standing over there. And he said, "Mom, I can't tell him I love him. People will..." Stopped him mid-sentence. So he sheepishly walked over to the little boy. He said, "Man, I'm really sorry." And then, awkwardly, he sort of hunched over and gave the boy a hug, worried about what his friends would say. And then, as quiet as he could possibly say it, "Also, I love you." He was so afraid of what his friends would say when he would turn around. But then the boy leaned in and hugged him tighter and said, "I love you too." Words truly are powerful. Amen.